Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. When Robert Posen was a partner at the Washington law firm, at a Washington law firm, I should say, he noticed something that seemed to go wrong. His firm didn't reward efficiency. You've heard about billable hours, right? Well, that's the way Posen's law firm brought in the money. The more hours he spent on a case, the more the law firm made.
Posen, among other things, is a bit of an efficiency nut, as you'll hear in a moment. He gets a lot done quickly. But because his firm billed by the hour, as most law firms do, his efficiency worked against him. If he did the job well and quickly, his clients might be well served, but he ran the risk of being underpaid because he billed a smaller number of hours than many of his colleagues.
Posen believes that what he experienced at that law firm afflicts far too many knowledge-based organizations. They apply what he calls an industrial-age mindset to 21st century professionals. The solution? Instead of counting and rewarding hours worked, organizations should judge success by the results.
So that's his message. But how would it work in the real world? Well, let's ask him and find out. Robert Posen is currently a senior lecturer at Harvard Business School and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He was chairman of MFS Investment Management and vice chairman of Fidelity Investments, as well as a secretary of economic affairs for Massachusetts under Governor Mitt Romney. He's the author of Extreme Productivity, Boost Your Results, Reduce Your Hours. And Robert Posen, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So let me start this way. We mentioned all those things, jobs that you've done, and I didn't give the full list. A lot of the work you've done, you've sort of, you multitask, and you're known as a sort of master of efficiency, the prince of productivity in many circles. Where does this reputation come from?
I think it mainly comes from the fact that I get a lot done in a relatively short time. I guess I've gone from multitasking to multi-jobs, and as you said, over the last 5 years, I helped MFS go from about $130 billion to $300 billion. At the same time, I taught a full course load at HBS, and this is my third book I've written in the last 4 years.
So you've figured out how to be productive. You wrote a very provocative piece, which sort of interested us in talking to you in the New York Times recently, talking about this idea of getting away from this industrial age mindset that businesses are still trying to apply to a sort of knowledge-based workforce. Can you expand a little bit on that about what's the problem out there?
Well, the problem is most significant in accounting firms, law firms, and consulting firms, which actually bill by the hour. So they're giving the people in those firms an incentive to take more time to do stuff, to over-research projects, and to probably overstaff them. This may help the firm earn more money, but it doesn't really do a good job for their clients. In many other organizations that don't actually bill by the hour, we have the phenomena of face time, meaning that bosses tend to reward people who spend the most hours in the office. So again, is that really productive? Supposing I was in the office only from 9 to 4, but I got a huge amount done. My colleague was in the office from 9 to 8 p.m., but he or she spent a few hours surfing the internet. So why should they be rewarded? They've actually been much less efficient. So we've got to get away from hours. It's just a crutch that managers use because it's very easy to measure, but it actually has very little to do with productivity, especially in the modern online world where some people don't even come into work. So it doesn't make any sense.
So is it is there something to be gained, or what is to be gained in an organization and maybe for people outside of their work? If they can figure out a way, if organizations essentially can figure out a way to reward results rather than hours actually worked?
Well, for most employees, there's an obvious reward that they can get home at 7 p.m., as I do every night, to have dinner with their family and friends. And then if they have to go back and do a little work at 10 p.m., well, they can do it. But obviously, it enhances their personal life. But at the business level, at the organizational level, it's also a lot better. Here's what I envision. Instead of people just counting hours, you sit down with your boss and figure out what are your priorities for the month? What are the key projects that you're going to do? And then once you have that list, you and your boss sit down and try to figure out the metrics for success. How are you going to measure success? For instance, if it's a software program that you're going to develop, is the client satisfied? How much was the cost of the program? What's its operational efficiency? So this not only helps you specify and really come to grips with the details of the programs, but it gives the boss the comfort that no matter how many hours you spend, even if you don't spend that many hours, you're getting the results that he or she and the clients are interested in. So this is really the way it's a win-win situation. From the company's point of view, a metrics and objectives-based approach gives them comfort that they're really getting the best result, not just somebody who's coming in hours. And if they don't get the best results, well, then they ought to take that employee to task. But they ought not to take the employee to task just because he or she is leaving at 4 o'clock. That may be a sign of great efficiency.
You're really talking about a sort of a sort of mini revolution in the workplace, aren't you? Because this idea of not leaving the workplace at 4 o'clock and coming in on weekends and, you know, working late and lots of extra hours, I mean, that's been so embedded in the idea of what it takes to be successful. But you're really talking about doing away with that.
Well, it is a cultural change, but I think more and more knowledge-based organizations and their clients are insisting on a different approach. It really doesn't make any sense to keep going on hours worked. When I was president of Fidelity, if I had an analyst who was brilliant, came in at 5 p.m., left at 10 p.m., and came up with some great stock ideas, I was satisfied. Why would I care whether they're in from 9 to 6 p.m.? It's irrelevant. And I made a point when I was president of Fidelity of leaving around 4 p.m. on Wednesdays afternoons to see my children's sports games. And it freed up everybody else in the organization to go and see their kids' sports games or go and take care of a dental appointment. And it's not like you had to ask special permission not to be there from 9 to 6. Everyone understood you had to get your work done. You had to get it done in a quality manner. But it didn't matter whether you did it from 9 to 6 or from 7 to 2. I mean, those are irrelevant points.
Well, listeners, we'd like to hear from you. We're talking to Robert Posen. He's a senior lecturer at the Harvard Business School, and he's also author of his latest book, Extreme Productivity, Boost Your Results, Reduce Your Hours. We're going to talk about some of the specifics in that book in a moment, but we're more interested in this general question. If you work in business, in government, in teaching, or any other knowledge-based work in which it might make sense to rethink how we value and reward the work you do, does Robert Posen's message sound workable to you? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
Can I give you an example?
Absolutely. I was going to ask
an example. Suppose you have a consulting project in which you're going to figure out where to place a new facility. And you hire a consulting firm. Mm-hmm. Well, you have two basic choices. You can say, okay, do the work and we'll pay you by the hour. But that's really not what you're interested in. What you're interested in is the quality of the result and to have it done at a reasonable price. So if instead of just doing this by the hour, what you do is sit down with the consulting firm and say, let's think hard before we start this project about what our parameters really are. Then you might discuss, for instance, well, we don't want to be in certain countries, we want to be in other countries. And here are some criteria that are important to us, taxes, labor supply, closeness to our markets. And you start to develop a set of objectives that you and the consulting firm can agree with. And then you say to them, okay, so here are our objectives, and we're going to judge your project by whether you can come up with a series of sites that meet these metrics. And if you can do that, then we're going to reward you. If you don't going to do that, then we're going to pay you a minimum fee. So it's sort of like the minimum fee is based on a very low hourly rate. And what we're going to do is give you a success fee if you can come in and meet the metrics. So that's a much better way for the firm that's hiring the consultants to figure out whether or not they're adding value. It doesn't matter how many hours they spent. The question is whether they produce something of value for the business. And this whole process of developing objectives and honing metrics really gets everybody on the same page and actually makes it much more likely that value will be added.
Isn't one of the challenges, though, I mean, if you're working in an organization and you have this idea, which in many ways makes a huge amount of sense to me, but how do you go about bringing that change when you're not the boss? In other words, how do you convince your boss that this is the way to go?
Well, that's a legitimate question, and you've got to first develop trust with your boss. Your boss has to view you as a producer, somebody who's not trying to minimize the hours so he or she can shirk work, but who's really trying to do a good job. And that takes a little while. But once you get a sense of trust with your boss, then you ought to sit down with your boss and work out your priorities for the month and the metrics for that. And if you can deliver those success by those metrics, after a while, your boss will feel comfortable. Most bosses are only using hours as a crutch. They're really not satisfied. And they themselves have bosses. And they themselves know that the number of hours they put in isn't the be-all, end-all. Mm. So it takes an education process, but really it's easiest, of course, if you start at the top and change this, but you can also work your way up.
We've got some listeners who want to get in on this conversation, Robert Posen. Before I go to them, I just want to ask you one more question about your experience, and that is, you know, we made reference, and this came right out of your piece in the New York Times, about your frustration at a Washington law firm a while back when you realized that, in a sense, you were being penalized for being so efficient. So how did you handle that? Did you go to the boss and say, hey, we've got to talk about a new way to do this?
Well, I did talk to people in the firm, and basically I talked to my clients, and they all agreed that I was the fastest lawyer in the East. So I said to them, well, you know, I think I got to charge a much higher rate here because I do things much quicker. And they all agreed. It was okay.
It was okay.
So
with
that's how we solved the problem. They assumed that I was on average 50% faster than the normal bear. And so we agreed on a significant rate increase.
I see.
So we had stayed within the hourly framework because that's the way the law firm operated. But they assumed that I was producing more per hour than any other lawyer that they were dealing with.
Listeners, you can join the conversation with Robert Posen. We're talking about another way to value, to put a price, essentially, on work rather than hours worked on results. How do we do that? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Dina, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Dina. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a senior executive at a publishing company, and I find as a working mom that really the only way I am able to maintain this career is to be able to have flexibility with my time and for my managers to value the content of my work. And I think this is an important issue for working women who often have a very hard time staying in the workplace where with the measurements of time instead of efficiency.
And Dina, are you finding that your boss are sensitive and like this idea of providing you with this kind of flexibility?
You know, it's been a little bit of a struggle for them. I mean, I think that in theory they like the idea and they're supportive of it. I do find that occasionally I have to sort of push back, and I've been very clear since the beginning that this is the only way I'm going to be able to do a good job for them, that it's important to me to be a good mom and it's important to me to be a good employee, and I need to have control of my time if I'm going to be able to do that.
Dina, thanks for the call, and let me put the...
Can I react to that?
Yes, I was going to ask you to.
Yeah, so I think that Dina makes a very important point that in terms of this work-life balance, especially for women with children, the flexibility of time is critical. And from the employer's point of view, people like Dina are very valuable. And in many cases, They had been working before they had a family, so they already know that this is a productive employee. And then they're much more willing to have flexible hours. And as we see in general, companies are much more willing to have flexible hours, and they're also more willing to have flexible places because people can work online. Now, there probably is for every company certain hours in the week and certain times in the month where they need the employee to be physically present. They may have, say, a staff meeting once a week where they want everybody present, or they may have certain client conferences that they need everybody present. But those can be agreed on. Outside of that, if Dina produces and she gets the results, what does it matter whether she's there at 9 a.m. in the morning or 11 a.m. or 7 a.m.? What does it matter whether she's doing this work at home after her kids go to sleep? These are the critical factors, and it takes a while to be accommodating to that. But if the firm believes that Dina is a valuable employee and a valuable producer, they will give her the flexibility.
Let's go to Bill, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is, I'm a psychiatrist, and as a medical doctor, I've been doing this for about 30 years, and I usually can kind of figure out what's going on after about 5 or 10 minutes, so I think I'm pretty efficient. But patients want an hour. So I'm wondering if Mr. Posner has some answers within a different environment, such as in a medical environment where efficiency is not always what the patient expects.
I think we have to realize that you're dealing with a specialized case, because here the customer wants two things, not one thing. The customer, in my view, wants a correct diagnosis and medication, et cetera, but they also want TLC. They also want the process of being heard and having you as the psychiatrist hear them. And for them, that process has a value independent of the medication or the result. So I don't think that your, you know, particular line of work is amenable very easily to a substantial, you know, increase in productivity with less time, because the very time of spent listening and processing information is critical. Now, by contrast, if we look at an emergency room, or we look at, say, various types of pediatric offices, we can see that nurses could provide much of the services that are now being provided by doctors. And so in that environment, we can figure out a way to increase the productivity significantly by focusing the doctor on the things that are most critical and only the doctor can do. Unfortunately, in your case, this is a very process-oriented thing, psychiatry. And so really the patient really wants to be heard out. And that's a and essentially you're providing two services, and it's the second service which makes it very difficult.
Well, Bill, thanks for the call. But Robert, Bill does raise it reminds me of a question that I wanted to ask you, or an issue that sort of came to my mind. I mean, what you're saying seems incredibly logical and intelligent to me. But in certain knowledge-based businesses, results aren't so easy to quantify and assess. And sometimes just the act of being together. I mean, I'm thinking, frankly, of my business. I mean, of course, we have programs and individual stories that get put out, and that's one way of measuring it. But sometimes just the act of being together and shooting the bull and talking about ideas, I mean, this is part of the process. And if we didn't come together and do that, we might lose something.
Well, you bring up indirectly the question of meetings. And as we all know, there are lots of meetings that are a waste of time and that people walk away and say, what the hell did I do going to that meeting? But one of the important functions of the meeting is for people to develop personal relationships, for you to debate and discuss things, and to come up with creative new ideas. So to the extent that you're meeting for those reasons, in my view, it's very productive. But the problem is we have lots of meetings which basically follow this route. Somebody calls a meeting. They don't send advanced materials. Somebody gets up, spends most of the meeting going through PowerPoint saying what the subject of the meeting. Everyone is totally bored. And then the meeting goes on and on, way beyond what people should do.
Yep.
So if we're going to have meetings, we ought to have agendas and advanced materials. Then we ought to have a short introduction so that we can spend most of our time debating. And then at the end of the meeting, we need to have closure. We need to all agree on what's going to happen here, what are the next steps, who's going to take responsibility for them, and what the time frame is. So that's a productive meeting. Now, you also raised the more general point that there are some metrics that are difficult. They're more qualitative. Sometimes the metrics have to be, take a customer satisfaction survey, as well as an objective thing is like, well, did you produce the right number of hours and the right shows? So from your profession, yes, there's an objective measure. Did you have a diversity of content? Did you cover various interesting areas, et cetera? But ultimately, if you're on the radio, it's what your listeners feel. So you have to really perhaps survey your listeners and see what are they most interested in? What do they think is good? And if to the extent that you're in a fundraising mode, you may have to look at your donors, what they think. So these are the sorts of imaginative ways and creative ways that you can start to think about metrics. This is not just, did you produce so many widgets per minute?
Sure. Well, speaking of what our listeners think, let's take a few more calls. Erica is calling from Hollis, New Hampshire. Hi, Erica. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a public school teacher. And I feel like this issue of spending time, constantly working is an issue in public schools. I feel like as a teacher, we aren't trusted to have free time. And so what happens is we have to constantly be, time on task is a big phrase in public education, and kids have to be constantly learning something, and the time to reflect is sort of taken away. And I feel like, you were talking about the creative process, and we don't get time to collaborate. We ask for it all the time, and I feel like something is really lost in public education when we don't have,
when we don't have time off task. It sounds like you're advocating. Robert Posen, you want to speak to Erica's point?
Well, I think she makes a good point that, in teaching, there's got to be some motivation. There's got to be some inspiration. There's got to be a way for teachers to retain their juice. And if the administration is so rigid that every hour has to be accounted for in some administrative fashion, either they're teaching or they're filling out reports or they're doing this, and there's no time left for curriculum development, for discussion of issues, then it's too bad. And it's really, again, people who are afraid to have a performance and a metric-oriented system, and then just go back to the crutch of hours. And here's the interesting thing. If you look at the data across the world in education, the system that winds up with the best grades across the world is the Finnish system, and they actually have relatively short days. And they don't start school very early in terms of age, and they don't have very long days. So the notion that just because you put a lot of hours in at school, then you get great results doesn't seem to hold. It's what happens in those hours, what happens in the interaction between the students and the teachers. So it's sad if we've subordinated what are the real criteria to just how many hours were you spent in the school today.
Sure. Let's take another call. Andy is calling from Providence. Hi, Andy. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually working on some metrics for end of fiscal year reporting for a local corporation. And so what I'm trying to come up with is a way of showing our efficiency improvements. And the best that I've been able to come up with is units per time. So we have various employees who are producing at various levels, and then I average that out. But when you were talking earlier about, well, let's get away from looking at units per hour and think more about just overall productivity, doesn't there still have to be some kind of a time frame involved? Like, you get only so many hours, 540 hours per employee per quarter, or
sure,
20...
Robert.
Yeah, sure. Of course, there has to be some sort of framework. But if your framework is totally narrow to how many units per hour, I believe you've lost something. And there's a whole set of literature that was developed here at Harvard Business School by Professor Robert Kaplan called the Balanced Scorecard. And his main point is that financial metrics only capture part of what a company does. You've got to have customer metrics. You've got to have operational metrics. And you've got to have qualitative metrics. And you've got to have a feedback loop. So there's nothing wrong with having as one metric, units of, soap that are produced by certain employees on a factory line. But the more you get into a knowledge-based a company, the more difficult it is to do that. And even in a soap company, it's not just the soap that's produced, it's the packaging, it's how the customer is viewing it, it's the service that the wholesalers are providing. You've got to have a broader view of productivity. And ultimately, the question is, who is your audience? Who is your client? Who is your customer? What is driving them? And then that has to drive the metrics for your company.
Well, Robert Posen, senior lecturer at Harvard Business School and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, thanks so much for coming in and talking about this. It's fascinating.
I just want to say one thing at the end.
Sure, we've got 10 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. My book deals with a lot more than what we've talked about. It deals with how to read, how to write, how to speak publicly, how to do travel. And this is just a small portion of the book.
It was just a tease to get people's brains thinking about this stuff. And the book, of course, is Extreme Productivity, Boost Your Results, Reduce Your Hours. Robert Posen, thanks so much. Stay with us, listeners. Coming up, Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown both set fundraising records in the past 3 months. We'll take a look at where the money will go with our political roundtable. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.